You are listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette Lake Charles, online at krvs.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. Je savais pas. I'm your host, excuse me, Esther Tyree, and in the studio with me today is Sophia T. with Vibrant Catacomb, which is a very fascinating name. We're going to get to that in a second, how it came from. So it's summertime, not officially, but I'm sure, you know, we don't follow the official seasons in Louisiana. So a lot of my upcoming guests are going to be inside activists, because it's outside, it's hot. I had gardeners back in when it started to get cool again, talking about working outside. Well, that's probably not going to be a whole lot of fun. So Sophia's in today to talk about what she does and hopes to inspire you to hang out in the air conditioning and stay cool and dabble. So anyway, Sophia, welcome to the studio. Thank you for being in today to kind of share your background, your journey, and the things that you're doing and working on. And I will look forward to hearing, because we didn't get a lot of pre-interview discussion about what exactly it is.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And, absolutely.
I might not be the best advocate in the world for AC, just because I do a lot of gardening myself. And most of what I'm doing is it's required to be outside, unfortunately.
But yeah.
I don't mind it too much. So.
No, well, and that's why there's pools and showers.
You're absolutely right.
So because there's not any visual that goes with the audio, and it's not like, you know, music where you just say, well, play for something, just kind of give a brief description about what it is that you do and how the name came about.
So my main focus is bringing attention to that which is readily discarded. So all of the things that I'm doing are organic. I grow all of my own flowers that go into the pendants. I hand press all of them. So my process for the jewelry alone can be anywhere from 2 to 3 months, just dependent on how long that flower wants to take to open for me. And then
wow.
With the bones, it depends on species, because pigs are greasy and bunnies are not. So it's, you know, it's sort of a variable, but everything that I do requires patience, because you can't rush any of it as much as you want to. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, just FYI to all the listeners, all art requires patience and practice and diligence and determination and dedication.
Practice makes permanent.
Yeah, so perfect practice. Be careful with that. But anyway, any practice is beneficial, because we, although, you know, at a certain point we forget that, we learn from our mistakes. I tell my students often, you learn to walk by stumbling and falling down and tripping and getting up and keeping working at it. And we learn to talk the same way. And then at some point, you know, somebody goes, oh, well, I got it all together. Let's just, you know, be perfect.
You're absolutely right.
Nope.
I mean, and perfection really isn't. You don't seek it, because it's impossible. You'll
right.
never achieve it. And I feel like another thing that it's a motto that I sort of live by is that everything ends. So that's the beauty in everything, is that everything ends. And that's okay. It's, I mean, things and people walk in and out of our lives, and we are sort of required to re-examine the parameters of what we're capable of,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that we can expand them, because
exactly.
that's important for growth.
Exactly. So based on what you were describing, your main sort of whatever is jewelry?
Jewelry is sort of the bread and butter of the operation. It was sort of an afterthought to the bone, because hand processing bone is not the cheapest hobby in the world, and it's also not as readily accepted. So when I first started displaying, I sort of came to this impasse where people were almost always perturbed by what I was doing. And for a while, I think it hurt my feelings. And then after a period of time, I was just sort of like, you know what? All I want from you is to acknowledge it. So it's okay if you don't like it. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's fine. But the jewelry, it sort of brings people that wouldn't otherwise be interested in what I'm doing to my table. So that's cool because it opens conversations with a variety of people. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely what I do the most of, just because it's sort of a faster process than the processing of the animals. So it's, you know.
So what was your entry point to making things with your hands?
Like, I think a lot of people that end up doing what I'm doing probably have some sort of formal training, but the only art class that I really plugged into was in elementary school with Miss Falgu.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a long time I had sort of convinced myself that I couldn't make art because I wasn't any good at it. And then I found some spinal column and I was really infatuated with the curvature of that, and started painting, learned that I was very skilled at gradation. And then my older brother was like, you know what would be really cool if you incorporated some sacred geometry? And I was like, I don't know anything about that. So I started researching it and I fell in love with it because it's about balance, you know. Mm-hmm. It's about proportion, and those are the things that I think I have the most trouble with in life, is finding balance. So it's sort of a place of solace for me, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And so I ran with it. And, you know, after a couple of years, everyone I know just brings me supplies. I rarely even look for it anymore, but everything I'm doing is found or given. And I have a strict no buy, no kill policy. So I want to preserve nature. I don't want to destroy anything for its beauty.
Right. So just describe briefly or explain what gradation is.
Gradation is a transition point between two colors, for me, is what it is. I actually don't know the formal definition of it now that I'm being called out. So
that's okay.
For me, it's just the point where it's a mixture between where one color begins and another color ends, and it's sort of like trying to make it seem as though they were never separated to begin with.
Okay. Yeah, it's more just to explain it where somebody listening would kind of be able to put a visual to the words, since we don't have visual pictures
true.
Or things to go with our audio. And then sacred
geometry.
That fascinates me because I was always a fan of geometry, except when it came to the proofs. I would put the answer on the paper and the teacher would say, you need the whole point of geometry is the proofing. I'm going, I don't understand it, but I know that's the answer.
I think for me, it was just that art didn't really make sense until I applied mathematics, which is the irony of that is I'm so bad at math that it's laughable. But it's just, you know, the laws of proportion, and that's incredibly difficult whenever you're putting it onto a skull, just because there's the margin for error is non-existent. I mean, you can't. One line is a degree off and you end up with a symbol that doesn't even mildly represent what you were going for. So it I like it because it challenges me to constantly show up with my war face every day, you know, because I don't have the opportunity to let things go, I suppose. And it's a standard that I just hold myself to.
Yeah. Well, there is so many of the artistic expressions involve some sort of math or science.
Absolutely.
You know, drama or theater, you have to understand the spacing on the stage and the set and the depth and the width, and then, you know, the length to the back of the audience where you're able to project your voice. Music is a very, very precise art form. And dance is very precise, especially if you have a group. So it's something that, you know, they've said that any of the art expressions helps a student understand math and science, or gives them a way to connect to it.
It makes it applicable in a language that's more natural for humans to speak, you know,
right.
I feel like. Because we're built to sing and dance and paint and
mm-hmm.
The concept that you have to be, you know, air quotations, good at it is sort of balderdash, because you don't need to be – what is good enough? What is good at it? You know, it's human to want to do those things mm-hmm. and to explore those things.
Exactly. And, you know, it's been said before that the purpose of art is not to be professional, just as the reason the purpose of walking and talking isn't to be a professional kicker or professional speech person. It's to navigate and communicate, and that's what art is. And yes, we do need our professional artists because that's what brings joy and beauty as we go around and lets us observe and maybe be inspired to, hey, you know, I was working on a project and that kind of inspired me. Let me go back and work on it. And so I appreciate you saying that because that's a lot of the reasons why I really wanted to have this show is to create that conversation between people about the fact that art is beneficial for art's sake. And being involved in it helps you stay connected to that inner creativity that everybody has as a child and is fostered. And yet at some point they get into school or life and, you know, somebody says, well, buck up and do this. And, you know, they forget that part. And it's like you forget a part of yourself. So it's interesting.
You know, we spend so much of our lives polishing this face and sort of picking and choosing the pieces of ourselves that we want or we think that are desirable. And we sort of forget what we really want to see in ourselves, I suppose.
Yeah. So let's go back a little bit to your flowers and your bones. I'm going to get stuck on the bones.
So with the flowers, that came very naturally because I've always gardened with, you know, my mother, my aunts, my grandmother, really. Mm-hmm. She instilled that in me pretty deeply. So the gardening and the pressing of the flowers came very naturally. The bone was... the bone was sort of an experiment, and I didn't realize how much I liked it until I sort of got my hands on that material. But from somebody who didn't want to buy anything processed already, I wanted to – because, you know, when you're buying that sort of stuff, you don't really know what kind of market you're supporting. And I wanted to be sure that
right.
everything I was producing was humane. So even with the insects that I put into the jewelry, nothing is collected before the end of its life cycle. Like
right.
I refuse to do that just because it's unnecessary. I mean, things are being born and growing and dying all around us all the mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I get it. And I appreciate the fact that you know, want to be humane, but also be eco-friendly and just let the process take itself. But so what do you do with the insects in the jewelry?
It's so if they're injured and I come across them and they, you know, they're not quite gone yet, I'll take them in and I'll give them sugar water until they pass naturally. And then you either have to put them in an airtight packaging or freeze them for a period in order to kill all of the microbials and, you know, whatever they've picked up during their life. And, it's a dismemberment process. I'm really only utilizing the wings at this point. I have plans for the future to maybe do some electroforming, but that's, you know.
And what is electroforming?
So electroforming is the process of taking a solid and dissolving it into an acid and then passing an electrical current through the object that you want that to adhere to. We can do that with stones already, but whenever you go into the realm of bone or insects, it's a much more fragile line to walk. And so the heat and the acid, honestly, have a tendency to sort of destroy things. So you have to be – I haven't found that balance yet. So it's not something that I feel like I can say I can do yet.
Interesting. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Jesave Pa, and my guest today is Sophia T. with Vibrant Catacombs. So – thank you for tuning in and listening. Tell me what – that name just is fascinating. How did you come up with that name?
I actually sort of ran with it without a name for a really long time. And then I sort of sat down and thought about what I wanted people – what message I wanted to bring across to people and what I wanted people to see whenever they looked at my art. Because obviously, you know, you can't alter perception
right.
beyond a certain point. But I feel like an appreciation for death is an appreciation for life. So Vibrant Catacomb is just, it turns it into sort of a spectacle, I suppose. So everything that I do has a lot of color. I like color a lot. I mix all of my own palettes, and I sort of try to, I've moved into Technicolor and rainbow a lot in the past couple of years, but I'm always experimenting with color and sort of like choosing palettes that I might not be that fond of in the moment, but then I start working with it. And it's like, it's just a reminder to bring color and life into mm-hmm. everything, regardless of what the subject matter is.
Yeah, and then not get stuck in just, this is my box and I'm staying here. No, open up that box and see where it leads. So let's go back to the flower pressing. Explain that a little bit.
So the flower pressing is...
Because I've only ever taken, you know, a flower and put it in a book. That's what I think of flower pressing.
A lot of it is kind of surgical, to be completely honest. So whenever, say, I'm, for example, a passion flower, since I think everybody... Or a maypop, for everybody who's listening. You know, they have those big stamens in the middle of them, and they're very wet flowers unless you remove that. But the removal process of it takes this level of delicacy, as well with the, you know, insect wings too. If you're not, if you don't understand the amount of pressure that needs to be applied, you're going to end up destroying it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll take them, I'll harvest them, I'll dismember them if that's what they need. So, you know, it's removing the hips, the stamens, whatever's too wet. And then a lot of like, well, passion flowers and wild violets, for example, need to go into the spine of the book, or they end up not really looking like anything. So if your book is too overloaded with flowers, or it doesn't have enough pressure, it has too much pressure, the flower is going to splay or it's going to crumple. So you can't look at it before it's ready. You have to be patient. So it's like 2 to 3 weeks dependent on the flower. And it's, I just buy old books from Goodwill, and I have like 75 of them now in my little art space that are just mm-hmm. sort of tucked under this desk.
Just out of that.
I write dates on them, and, you know, I've used them. I think I've used most of them for about 3 years now. So it's just delicacy, really.
Mm-hmm. And so once you're done with the, once the flower pressing is done, what, where does that go? What happens with it?
I am pretty notoriously obsessive compulsive. So everything has to remain color coordinated. I put them all into the book in the same genus, because I know every genus that I press as well. So that I just like to be able to tell that to whoever is viewing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll, I pig ear the books because, you know, I'm bad, I suppose. I'm putting flowers into books anyway, so why not pig ear them? But I open it up, I take them out, and then they have, like, separate compartments. I have all of these little containers, and they all have their designated place to go.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then, so your jewelry, is that earrings, necklaces, bracelets, rings, what?
I do rings, necklaces, and earrings primarily right now. My best sellers are probably the rings, just because... you know, they're fun, and I have a lot of different styles. But it's, I use glass dome inserts and high viscosity glue. So it's this process of putting glue not only on the foreground of it, but on the background of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like placing the glass dome insert down quickly enough to where you don't end up with bubbling, but not so quickly that you end up pushing everything out of your frame. So it's, I've developed like these techniques, I suppose, but it's not something that I ever really looked into how to do. I just developed my own process.
Right. By working and exploring, you kind of figure out what worked for you and what didn't.
It's a lot of not breathing, if I'm being completely honest.
Gotta breathe. So the base of the ring, the part that goes around the finger, do you purchase those? Do you make those?
I purchase them. They are pre-manufactured. I am capable of doing the green sand molding. We've done that in the past with aluminum, because aluminum cans, a little known fact, is that they're actually hydroformed aircraft-grade aluminum. So they're not by any regard a trash metal.
Mm-hmm.
So we have done that. But, you know, you're the price point goes up, you know, and it's not accessible to everyone. And I really wanted to create a product that was accessible for anyone who came to my table and not just, you know, a select few.
Right. Okay. So then with the bones, what do you do with those?
So
do they hang as earrings or?
I actually don't do a lot of bone jewelry. I did a small selection of cameos with like duck heads and small rodents and stuff like that. But the bones are mainly the best description that I've ever gotten was a macabre portrait piece. So none of them – I have, think, made like two or three that hang. But for the vast majority of them, they – they're sort of centerpieces or bookshelf pieces, but it's a lot of acrylic. I do a little bit of like two-part epoxy molding. So it's not – most of what I'm getting is not whole. It's damaged. So I have this opportunity to determine whether or not I'm going to fix the damage or accentuate the damage. But mm-hmm. sculpting is something that comes very naturally to me. So if I – fabricated a portion of the bone, you probably wouldn't know unless I told you.
Interesting. And then how big are these pieces that sit on the shelf or the...
Oh, that varies because, you know, the cow heads, I think, are... I mean, they're as big as my torso, which there's no visual representation of that. So
You get cow heads?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I don't turn anything down. My favorite are pig heads, just because their eye sockets are sort of alien. They have this curvature that's not present in any other animal. And while they're not necessarily carnivorous, they're more of, you know, omnivores, their mm-hmm. bottom jaws are fused, which is something that you only see in predatory animals, but not every species of predatory animal.
Interesting. So you get a pig head and...
I don't know how far into detail I'm allowed to go. It's basically a process of removing whatever is excess. And then I have a wild colony of domestic beetles, which are flesh-eating beetles. And I let them do their thing. This is actually, we're in the middle of prime time season for that. So they're mm-hmm. very, very active this time of year. And after, I mean, it could be 2 weeks or it could be 2 months. I take them in and I put them into a maceration bucket, which is just hot soapy water. And then they're cleaned with 30% hydrogen peroxide, mm-hmm. so that none of the calcium is leached. But you end up with a sterile product, you know, so I'm not handling anything that's not completely clean.
Right. That could fester or cause germs or stink.
It's more like the risks involved with it are mm-hmm. definitely there, as with most art. I mean, you're going to have some kind of caustic chemical that you have to deal with or what have you. I mean, I guess not every art, but most of the art that I know that people do has some risk involved.
So we have Art Walk coming up soon. Well, actually, we just have had the June Art Walk. So July, will you be out for the July Art Walk?
I will. I will be out July 13th. I'll be out there with Red Works. He'll be doing a live blacksmithing demonstration in front of Legacy. Mm-hmm. We have a very unique community of artists that join us. So we've got prints and acrylic and abstract and jewelry and blacksmithing and just about anything that you'd want to see. But it's, you know, his blacksmithing demonstration goes on between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. because we have to shut it down about an hour before we're ready to leave. So
it cools off. And
right. All of the equipment.
Pick it up and haul it. Yeah. All the details that you have to consider when you are transporting your art to do somewhere other than your studio or your house. Yeah. So a lot of people don't understand that there's a process. I have thrown that into when parents come and approach me about music lessons. And I'll say, well, you're teaching your child to an adult. With the side benefit of having a safe way to navigate adulthood, and you're throwing in Intro to Driver's Ed. They look at me, I'm like, well, you have this whole process to set up getting ready to play and then taking everything apart, you know, putting, especially if it's violin or one of the stringed instruments. But yeah, it's that's another thing too, just having an artist share that there is a process to getting started and there's a process to, you know, winding down, and especially if you are going outside of your studio area to exhibit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for us, it's, collectively, probably around 300 pounds of equipment that we have to haul because the bones are not light by any regard. I have a cow head that I've held onto. I don't think I'll ever sell her, and that's okay. but she's about 25 pounds on her own.
Wow.
And, you know, it's sort of this game of Tetris to get everything in and out of the vehicle. Because, mm-hmm. you know, everything is – it's not real, real sensitive, but it's sensitive enough to be worrisome if you don't know what you're handling.
Right. And you have to be careful how you pack it and make sure that it doesn't get jostled, mashed, whatever. So share with the listener any social media or website info. So if they're not able to make it to Art Walk and they're fascinated by your descriptions, they have a place to go and see.
Sure thing. So on Facebook, I'm Vibrant Catacomb. And on Instagram, I'm Vibrant Catacomb as well. And unfortunately, those are the only two forms of media that I'm consistent with. I'm not the best at keeping up with it. But I do post things and, you know, I try to adhere to whatever people would like to see about my process. So. Mm-hmm.
And so through those, too, if they had further questions.
Oh, absolutely. I love questions. That's my favorite thing.
Great. And then do you do custom orders or you just kind of, this is what I envisioned with this and here it is?
Actually, I love custom orders the most just because they force me to reexamine the parameters of what I'm capable of. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I might not be that skilled at southeastern or southwestern motif, but I did a piece that recently that had a lot of that on there, and I found that I really liked that style, but it's not something that I would have reached for otherwise. So that, and you know, if with the jewelry and stuff, if you want to see a specific variety of flower, I'll cultivate that and I'll press it, and then I have that added to my repertoire. So for me, it's a win-win because they get to see exactly what they like to see, and I get to see how far I can push myself.
Yeah, which is always helpful in your journey as an artist. So do you have we're going to be wrapping up in a bit. Do you have a interesting story to share based on that? Like somebody came back and, because one of my other guests, she says, I was somewhere and somebody came up and was wearing a piece of jewelry that they'd bought from me at another place. And I said, isn't that really cool when you have that opportunity?
I don't have a story about the jewelry, but recently I had a cow head that was brought to me by a gentleman who found it in rural Honduras on an excursion, carried it around with him for 2 weeks, brought it into the United States, and had it for 20 years.
What?
So, and I'm 24, so I think, you know, for me, it had been waiting for me kind of my whole life, so.
That's funny. Well, Sophia, we appreciate you being in here today to discuss your work and your craft and your journey and what you've learned. And you've been listening to Je Savais Pas, a production of KRBS, brought to you as a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, which joins you in support of this station. This is KRBS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, online at krbs.org. Thank you for listening. Have a great afternoon and stay cool.
A story that changed the way you saw the world.
I had witnessed the terrifying joy of unbearable responsibility.
We fight for identity, sometimes we kill for identity, but why is that?
I can't let my life be this, because if I give up right now, that's what my life will be.
I'm Guy Raz. Join me each week for inspiring stories on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Wednesday night at 8, here on KRVS.
So
great Louisiana two-steppin', waltzes, and ballads. Tune into All Card here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette.